retreat, we go a little bit more deeper into the meditation. Hopefully, with going deeper, you get, and those who've been here the last few days, get a much more profound experience of what this mind and body are like, and all the amazing things which you can experience with deep meditation. Those of you who just arrived, welcome here, and hopefully that you've come for this part of the retreat, because you've had some experience before. So I won't be approaching the meditation as I did over the last few days, accommodating for the real, real beginners. Are you okay there? Okay? There will be charging there. So we're going to be taking the 8 precepts, or rather the 7 precepts. We were talking about the 7 precepts. People were asking me, they know the 8 precepts, so which precept are you going to keep? Can you choose which of the 8? But I think the reason is because the management were thinking that the beds in your rooms may be regarded as luxurious. But they're not really that luxurious. So it really could be 8 precepts if you wanted to. The meaning of that 8th precept of not using high luxurious beds. I mean, really luxurious beds, big water beds or 4-poster beds. So I think the beds you have in your rooms are probably okay. But nevertheless, we're doing this 7 precepts, so we'll just do the 7 precepts. Well, you didn't do the whole 8, for goodness sake. Just do the whole 8. Because you're allowed to sleep on your beds. It's a misconception to think that to keep the 8 precepts you must always sleep on the floor. You can sleep on the beds. Many monks sleep on beds. I happen to sleep on the floor because I prefer it in my cave. But when I'm here, I usually sleep on the bed. So you can sleep on your bed, still keeping the 8 precepts, because the beds, yeah, they're comfortable, but they're not really luxurious in a sense like a king or a queen or a very rich person sleeps on. So we'll give the whole 8 precepts. But the whole purpose of the 8 precepts is just to have a little bit more restraint. The most important part of that precept, those 8 precepts, is you're not going to go watching the TV or listening to radio or music or stuff. You're not going to distract yourself. And all the other entertainments which are available in this hotel, such as like going swimming or kayaking or playing table tennis, all these other things which are distractions, don't leave them alone. And it's even the evening meal as well. So you can have this heaps of stuff you can have in the evening. You have cheese and stuff which are supplied for you. So you have a big lunch. Maybe have a rest after the lunch if you feel tired. And then it means a whole afternoon and evening. And just three, have this whole length of time where you can really get into meditation. Because remember, if you are meditating, sometimes one meditation after another, after another, after another, you build up the depth of your peace. It just happens naturally. If you meditate for half an hour, then you go shopping or you go visiting the sites, or you go swimming or something. Sometimes you spoil the peace which you've made for half an hour. But because we're keeping these 8 precepts, it means that half an hour, another half an hour, another hour, it builds up. So you have more opportunity of getting into really, really nice meditation. And also, you've got nothing else to do. So there's no escapes for you. You have to face up to your mind, to deal with it, to calm it down, and bring it to a sense of peace and happiness. And it's because the times when I've meditated, even as a lay person before I became a monk on retreats, they had such profound effects on my life. Even realizing that just as a normal young man, you could get some very profound meditations. That is the reason why I love teaching. It was almost, I got some nice meditations which changed my life, and I realized I should do the same to others and give them the opportunity as well to taste peace of mind, to taste freedom, to taste the bliss of a very peaceful and calm mind. So you're not just believing in Buddhism, you're experiencing what this Buddhism is really all about. The peace of mind, nirvana, freedom, happiness, really internal happiness, non-detachment, all those things you can experience when you go deep. That's why I love teaching. It's a fantastic thing for people to have a personal experience of. So because of that, we're doing a bit of chanting to begin with. I'll ask afterwards how much chanting you really, really want to do. I know that some people love chanting, but personally, I prefer to keep chanting to a minimum and do lots more meditation. So that's personal. But tonight we'll do some chanting because it's welcoming people who have just arrived, and it also gives the opportunity to give the 8 precepts. So we can start. If you've got your chanting books, yes, we do the Arahant first of all, and then we do the Namo Tassa. Oh no, the 3 refuges. It's Arahant, Namo Tassa, they're 3 refuges. I'll say Namo Tassa, where's Namo Tassa coming your way? Yeah, that's right. It's Arahant, Namo Tassa, that's right, yeah. There are 3 refuges and a tipiso, and then we do the 8 precepts, and then we do lastly the Metta Sutra image. Okay, so here we go.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa.
Now do the 3 refuges.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Now do the qualities of the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Iti piso bhagava arahaṃ sammā sambuddho vicca-caraṇa-sampanno sagato lokavidu anuttaro purisadhammasāvati sattade vamanusānaṃ buddho bhagavati Savakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sandipiko Akaliko Enipasiko Opanayiko Achata Vedipako Vidyuhiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sojo Patipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yaya Patipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Savici Patipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadigam Chathari Purisa Yugani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ahuneyo Ahuneyo Dakineyo Anjalikaraniyo Anutaran Punyaketa Lokasati.
Now we turn over a page or two to the eighth precepts. We're giving the eighth precepts, if you came in late, because as far as I'm concerned, those beds, yeah, they're pretty comfortable, but they're not really what I say is that luxurious. I've been in some people's houses and couldn't believe the beds that I was sleeping on. But anyway, these are okay. So you keep the eight precepts. Before eight. You've only got seven on there. Well, okay, I'll add the eight. Many of you know it, and you can just repeat it after me anyway. So we start all together.
Anatipata Veramani Sikapadam Samadhyami Adinadana Veramani Sikapadam Samadhyami Abrahmacharya Veramani Sikapadam Samadhyami Musavada Veramani Sikapadam Samadhyami Surabhevaya Macha Hamatatana Veramani Sikapadam Samadhyami Vikara Bhojana Veramani Sikapadam Samadhyami Nacha Gita Vadita Visukha Dasana Mala Gandha Vilepana Dharana Mandana Vibhusanatana Veramani Sikapadam Samadhyami.
And the eighth
Uchasayana Mahasayana Veramani Sikapadam Samadhyami.
Those are the eight precepts. Now we just finish off with the Metta Sutta, which is in English at the back. This is in English.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be ever and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and in nothing in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or missing none. The great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise anything in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protests with her life her child, her only child, so with a father's heart should one cherish a living being, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and under death, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is now born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Excellent. Reason I like to introduce Dr. Guru Special Mecca Shah, it has a lot of good instructions about meditation in it. Let them be contented and easily satisfied. With those two phrases give a huge teaching on how to meditate. To be easily satisfied, which means you don't have much craving, not many wants, no goals, because the purpose of the meditation is to let go of craving. To be easily satisfied, to be content, that means you don't want anything. And remember that the attitude of mind which drives meditation ever deeper and ever more profound is the ability to once and for all let go of this craving. Before the Buddha became enlightened, when he was still a bodhisattva, we have the story where he put his ball in the river Nilanjana, and he made a determination, if I am to become enlightened, may my ball flow against the current, against the stream, which it did. That's according to the story of the Buddha's enlightenment. It's not just an omen who was telling him how to become enlightened. To go against the stream of craving means to stop that craving, which means to do nothing, to be still. Sometimes when we ask, what should we mean by being still? What should we let go of? And it's not letting go of the things out there in the world. That's so easy to do. It's letting go of this thing inside which always wants to control, manipulate, attain, achieve. That is the thing which is the problem for meditation. So learning how to be content is undermining that controller inside of us, which stops us being still. And because we're not still, That's why we never experience the profundity of deep meditation, is bliss, is stillness, and the great insights which come from it. And for those of you who have just arrived, I'm sure that many of you have listened to my teachings many, many times. Yes, sometimes they are a bit different than other monks' teachings, because I don't follow just the tradition of the teachers, I follow the tradition of the Buddha. And looking at those early teachings, learning Pali, and using the brain which I had to get to Cambridge to really understand this Pali, and to see deeply into these teachings, and also to compare it with my own sort of knowledge of meditation, experience in meditation. There's many, many new things which come up. One of the advantages of being a Westerner rather than being an Asian monk is Western monks question. Asian monks just take for granted what they heard from their teachers. If their teacher said it, it must be true. Westerners re-challenge. So it's been a wonderful thing that we've had Western monks who look deeply and challenge and see some of the mistakes which have stopped people becoming enlightened. Even simple things. Simple things like not teaching you the deepest meditation, which very few monks ever did. In fact, they really did not give the lay community the respect it deserved. And thought, yeah, just all you need to do is to feed us the Maid Mary, we'll give you the precepts, and that's it. Basically, not letting you see the very, very powerful teachings and experience of Buddhism. When I started reading those original texts, it was clear that even lay people getting into jhanas, getting streaming in, once returning and not returning. So it was there in the time of the Buddha, why not now? So we start to teach these things, especially when you started to read. Now this is real teachings of the Buddha, which is why I invite and encourage every one of you to read those teachings. Simple ones, like in the Gopakamogalana Sutta, where somebody asked, just after the Buddha's final passing away, they asked Ananda, what did the Buddha teach? What type of meditation did the Buddha teach? You know the answer? This is from Ananda just after the Buddha passed away, recorded in the sutras for posterity. It's in the Majjhima Nikaya. He said, the Buddha throughout his whole life only taught four types of meditation. He only recommended and praised four types of meditation. That's all. And those four types of meditation the Buddha praised? First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. That is Buddhist meditation. It's praised by the Buddha. Everything else the Buddha never was interested in. Now that's powerful stuff. So this is Buddhism. We shouldn't really downplay the importance of that. Straightforward Buddhism is Eightfold Path, which you all know. Not a sevenfold, sixfold, fivefold, fourfold path, but the whole eight factors. The last of which is first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. Always defined that way. Now, one of the things which people have been confused with, and I don't just say this just to create controversy, but it is a big problem which has stopped people getting to deep meditation, getting people enlightened. Sometimes I ask myself, why aren't there so many stream winners and once returners and non-returners and arahats alive today? One of the reasons is because the teachings of meditation, especially to the English-speaking world, were hindered by a bad translation. A bad translation of samadhi, the eighth factor of the Eightfold Path. That factor in English from over 100 years has been translated as concentration. As I mentioned to the people who first came here 4 days ago, and I mention now for the benefit of those who really want to get into serious meditation, samadhi does not mean concentration. Samatha is not concentration. That's a very bad translation. The reason is because once we get into our head, it means concentration. With that idea comes all of the means to become concentrated. Force, effort, pushing through pain, pushing through disturbances, enduring, just I'm going to concentrate. Concentration is what we achieve in life through effort. Samadhi is what we achieve in life through letting go. A totally different path, totally different result. And it was just from your own experience and through expensive reading of the suttas in Pali, you got the idea that actually samadhi did not mean concentration at all, it meant stillness. And as soon as you change that translation, it changes the whole ball game of meditation for many people. Stillness, not concentration. So the goal is not to concentrate, the goal is to experience stillness. And you realize you can never become still through effort. If you're still, so if you concentrate, it's work. You agitate things. And it's never still. To become still, you have to let go. The simile, which I did playfully the first day, but now I'm going to be serious. The water in this cup stands for the mind. How do I get this water to be still? You can never hold it still. No matter how hard I try, how hard I concentrate, I will never get this water still. The way to achieve stillness of this water is to put it down, to let it go. And if you notice, you pay attention, when I first put it down, it moved more. That's an important point I'll come to later. But after a while, it's its nature. It moves less and less and less until it comes to stillness. And that's pretty still. I would never be able to hold that water that still. I let it go and it becomes still. So stillness is the goal. Then you understand holding things, concentrating, working, stops it being still. Putting it down, letting go, becomes still. There's a few times you can employ one. Siyasala, Mayutman, Tuman. That's what that Ajahn Chah kept on saying. Yut means holding on to. Tur means to grasp it. Ploy Wan means let go. I don't know how many times my teacher said that, let go. I said, okay, I'm going to let go. I'm going to really let go now. I'm going to really, really, really let go. And I kept on holding it harder and harder and harder, getting frustrated. But it's a month long enough, you know, by trial and error, you soon enough realize, let go and your mind becomes still. And as far as the inside is concerned, because still people get confused. Well, isn't that calm meditation? And when you're calm enough, then you do insight. This is absolutely wrong teachings. You don't do inside meditation. You don't do anything. Inside is what happens. When a lake of water is perfectly still, only then does it reflect perfectly the image of the moon and stars above it. If that lake has ripples in it or waves in it, you get a distorted image of the sky above. But only when the lake is perfectly still. That's why we say it's glassy surface to that lake in the mountains. Only when it's perfectly still, you get an accurate, perfect image of the heavens above. In the same way, only when the mind is perfectly still, does it reflect the Dhamma with no distortion. That's where you see things. Insight arises along with the stillness of the mind. It's not something you do. It's something which happens automatically when you're still. That's just what happens. And I must say that I was pleasantly surprised almost 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago, in Perth, there were a couple of Chinese-born people from mainland China staying to meditate in Jhana Grove. And when they heard my teachings, because these were professors, one is a professor of MIT, they came up to me and said, look Ajahn Brahm, well done, because they've also studied these suttas in the Chinese version in what we call the Agamas, which is the equivalent of the Pali Tripitaka. That's the word samadhi has been translated for about 1500-1600 years in the Chinese as stillness. I know they did teach me to pronounce it, but I keep on getting it wrong. Something like Guan Shu. There's enough Chinese people or Mandarin speaking people from Singapore. You know, Guan is the same word as Quan Yin, looking on. And Shu, Shu or stillness. What is it? Su. Su? Stillness? Okay. My Mandarin is not very good. But anyway, it's the word for still. Nothing moving. So that's how it was translated. So that's what this samadhi means. Allowing things to be still. Once you understand that, you understand what meditation is. And a lot of you, you do have that intuition. That must be what meditation is. Because where there's stillness, there's peace. And you have all these images of these hermits, these old monks, maybe nuns of hundreds, thousands of years ago, sitting perfectly still. The body not moving, their mind not moving. Absolutely still. And you realize that those are the states of deep meditation. So don't ever think of concentration. Think of stillness. And that's what we're going to be doing for the next few days. See how still our mind could become. And that stillness, which is I call it like the carrot, you know, the thing which encourages you to do this. That stillness is surprisingly present. When you teach people meditation, first of all, sit there still, just not doing nothing all day. That must be the most boring thing ever you can do in life. You teach this to young people, say, that's really boring, sitting in this hall, meditating all day, when you've got the beach, you've got volleyball, you've got the national parks next door, you've got shopping, you've got so many things to do, get a life. And it's surprising just why people don't do that. Because once the mind becomes still, it gets so pleasant, so happy, that you've never experienced a happiness like that ever before. It's a superior happiness. And that's one of the reasons why the Buddha said that, look, he was asked by King Ajatasattu in the Samanyapada Sutta, you know, you're the Lord who said, what are you doing this for? They're just living in a cave or up in the vulture's peak, only eating just when you get an answer. You could be a king like me, have many wives and whatever food you want. What are you doing this for? And the Buddha said, because I get more pleasure out of it than you do, king. And that really impressed the king, because it's not what he expected. We expect the monks and nuns to have an ascetic life. No pleasure, no fun. That's one of the reasons we call them the female monastics, nuns in the West. None of this, none of that, none of everything. Who wants to be a nun? Gee. Maybe you only become a nun because you can't find a boyfriend or a partner in life. You have nothing else to do, you reject it. But that's not the reason. It's amazing when, especially sometimes people in Thailand, when they see the sort of people who become monks in the West. We're not dummies. You know, I got this great degree from Cambridge University. My second monk has got two MAs. These are some really clever people. These are not losers who would not be able to live in the world. And I often say, if I had become a monk and was in business, I would be a multimillionaire. I've got all these incredible ideas to do things in a new way and get great businesses. And I'd be just a multimillionaire by now if I wasn't a monk. I got a good brain, and innovative too, get things done. I am a high achiever. But I've done this for meditation and for Buddhism, not for money. So people become monks and nuns not because they're losers and idiots, because they're wiser than the rest of you. And I mean that. So you start to get incredible peace and stillness and happiness, literally beyond your wildest dreams. And it's going to blow you away if you ever touch any of that. I mean, literally, this is going to be something you never expected. Bliss beyond your wildest dreams. And with that, meaning of life, what we're all here for, past life, understanding who you are, the whole works comes from this. That's why it's incredibly powerful. And sometimes people say, oh, we're not going out to spread Buddhism. I say, what are you talking about? You've got this incredible, powerful peace, bliss and freedom. It's like, I've got the keys to get you out of jail. And of course, I'm not going to sort of pass you by and not unlock your cell door. That's really selfish and uncompassionate. I'm going to give you those keys so you can just walk out. That's what it feels like. What it feels like when you get into these deep meditations or get insight. If I've been in this prison for such a long time, and I thought this prison was freedom, I spent all my life decorating my prison cell. And finding a nice partner to share my prison cell, will having babies in my prison cell, feeling how great I am because my bank account of prison credits is so big, with so many dollars and euros or whatever. But I never realized I was in a prison. I was born there, got used to it, and took it for granted. Until someone showed me freedom, real freedom. Wow. Once you know that real freedom, you realize why the Buddha lived and taught, so other people can get out of prisons. We build for ourselves. We do that by letting go. And this is not just theory. These are what you experience. So, what people will always ask when they first start a retreat, well, what do we do? And what I want you to try and do for the next 3 and a bit days you're here is always be in the present moment. So don't even count the days or the hours. Don't worry about how long you're meditating for or how short you're meditating for. Because time is one of those prisons we put ourselves in. Literally, if you're having a good time, carry on meditating. If it's working, you're getting somewhere, just keep on going. If there's an ache in the body, or you feel tired, you have to go to the toilet, or it's not really working, then change your posture. Which is why that I wanted to teach the very beginning of this 8 precept retreat. Many of you may not happen to know how to sit on the floor and meditate, or maybe you think you do. But there's a problem there that after a while your body will start to ache. Doesn't matter who you are. Now, I've been meditating for such a long time now, but my body's getting old, the aches are increasing. So there's people much older than me. So you sit down there and try and get the body peaceful, but once it starts to ache, please don't push through the pain. You will just get frustrated and tense. That's what happens when we have pain, it makes us tight. So when there is a pain, if there's a pain in the legs, then move them when you're meditating. A pain in the back, then maybe stretch it a bit. But if you realize it's not going to go away, stop. Get up, change your posture. So, we don't just do sitting meditation, we do walking meditation. Try and balance the day between sitting meditation and walking meditation. And once you get tired walking, then go back to sitting. When you get tired sitting, then go back to walking. Do that for many, many hours. And to do walking meditation, we've got this whole corridor, I hope. Or if you haven't, there's other events going on next door. How long for? Haven't started yet? Till Saturday. Till Saturday, okay, we're only going till Sunday. I got okay, loads of ground outside to see if you can find a nice place to do your walking meditation. It can be even in this room over here. You know, on the beach is usually there's too much activity goes on there during the day. There are corridors, you know, where you live, and there's many other places you can find to try and do some walking meditation. No one's using the other room? Which one? Next door here? Okay, the one right across here. That's a nice place to do walking meditation. And how you do walking meditation is you just get your little path, maybe about 20 steps, it can be less, it can be more. Start at one end. Tell yourself this is not the time for thinking, not the time for working out problems, not the time for making plans. This is just the time, again, for stillness. So you start at the beginning and you walk. Present moment awareness, no past, no future. Silence as best you can. Don't go thinking and writing your biography. Instead, just put your attention on the legs which are moving. So you can feel the left leg move. You can feel the right leg move. And then the left leg, and then the right leg. In the same way that in breath meditation, which many of you know, you watch the breath go in, you watch the breath go out. Here you watch the left foot move, then the right foot move. So instead of watching the movement of the breath, you're watching the movement of the legs. That's why it is very similar, and it fits in very easily with the breath meditation. So you do that, put your attention, your sight about 2 meters in front of you. Don't get out a tape measure and say, what's 2 meters? Roughly, it doesn't matter if it's a meter or 3 meters, I don't care. Just so you know where you're going, so you feel safe, you're not going to trip up over anything, and you're not going to bang into the wall. So just common sense, about 2 meters in front of you, and just with your eyes maybe half closed. But so you're not looking left, not looking right, just in front of you, and walk at a natural pace. Don't try and force it, don't try and slow it down. Whatever feels good for you, you walk at that pace. The most important thing is you're in the present moment and all your attention is with the movement of the feet. Because you're restricting the mind's activity, you do get very, very still. And then when you've had enough of that, you can sit down in meditation, and you don't have to start at the very beginning of meditation, sitting meditation, you're already very calm and still. So you're way ahead, you can get even more peaceful as you sit down and meditate. And when you get tired, do walking. So walks it, walks it, walks it. In some retreats they have these bells. They tell you 45 minutes walk, sitting meditation, 15 minutes walking, 45 sitting, 15 walking. Regimented like that. I really dislike that simply because that some of you 45 minutes will be too long. For others it's far too short when you're meditating. So instead of trying to force everybody into the same schedule, you make your own schedule. If you want to meditate for 10 minutes sitting down and walk for an hour, fine. You do what makes you still and peaceful. So we do that throughout the day as much as possible. If you really get tired and you feel tense inside, one of the good things to do is go and have a cup of tea. Hopefully that tea is available at any time outside. Yes, so you can make yourself a cup of tea or coffee any time. When you go and have a cup of tea or coffee, it's not the opportunity to sit around there and chat with somebody else. Take your cup of tea and go and sit in a quiet place. So you can enjoy the tea rather than having someone to chat with you. So you want to try and keep it quiet. Try and avoid people. You socialize with people for such a long time. This is 3 days where you don't have to socialize at all. You don't have to say things. But when people say something to you, it's so difficult by saying, look, you shouldn't speak. So, but you just spoke. Yeah, but so did you. So, what to do? When somebody speaks to you, your response is just to put your finger up. And that tells people, without actually breaking the speech, to be quiet. It's a universal sign to be quiet. In Chinese, in Hindi, in Eskimo, and in English, that means shush, be quiet. So everybody knows that. So they can't speak to you, so you don't have to respond. However, if it's something important and they say, the hotel's on fire, and you go Now that's being stupid. So, noble silence does not mean stupid silence. If there really is something to say, I've had a heart attack, call the doctor, call an ambulance, then please don't be quiet. Call. That's noble silence. But you find a lot of you don't have to talk at all. Most of it, talking, is totally useless. So if you have to speak, you can use my method of the three questions, or the three tick boxes. You know these tick boxes? You have to tick number one, A, B, C, and if you tick all of them, then you're free to go. But the first thing you should consider, the first box to tick before you speak, is to consider, is this really necessary? And if you consider that, yeah, it's really necessary, then go to question two. Is this really, really necessary? And if you tick that box, then go on to the last question. Is this really, really, really necessary? And only if you tick that third box can you open your mouth and speak. And usually by that time the person's gone away. So you can't speak anyway. But what it's doing is you're reflecting to make sure it really is necessary rather than just bursting out with mindless chatter. That way you can keep quiet and you'll be amazed just how wonderful it is to be with each other and not have to speak. We can bond in a totally different way. We can be friends, very deep friends, without having to express anything through words. Amazing experience. Some of the retreats I do, maybe I've stopped doing this now, but a little exercise done as a teaching tool. 9 days retreat, noble silence, no one talking. And on the last day I said, okay, after lunch you can all talk to each other on the last day, even though we had 2 or 3 hours left of meditation retreat. And I did that because most people, they didn't even want to speak after 9 days. Now they could. They didn't. I said, why not? They realized they enjoyed being silent. It was so wonderful, even though it was not against the rules anymore, they wanted to be silent anyway. It was great teaching and a lesson that silence is golden, and the price of gold is always increasing. So silence is much more valuable than it was 2 years ago. And it's pretty valuable then. So silence is beautiful. And in silence, we're not talking to another person, so we're much more aware and mindful of what's going on inside of you. We're able to sort of guide your meditation into stillness. So with silence, we do our day with walking and sitting. If you're tired, have a cup of tea. If you're really tired, go to your room, lay down and take a nap any time of the day or night. And just sleep without any alarm clocks, so you just sleep naturally. When you feel you're stressed enough, get up, maybe have a shower. So have a nice, easy day to be able to work with your body and mind rather than have all these ideas. No, you're not allowed to sleep. You slept enough already. No, you shouldn't have a cup of tea. You just had a cup of coffee. Don't be like that. Just be sensitive to the needs of your body and mind. If you need, sometimes you feel tension, go for a long walk. And sometimes that is wonderful. You go for a long walk, you come back, and then you're ready to meditate, and it works. So this is how you work with your body and mind. Tomorrow morning I will give you some more instructions, not really how to meditate. I've given you more than enough instructions on how to meditate. Sit here and let go. Put the cup down. Pay attention to this thing inside of you, which always wants to do things, always wants to control, always wants to aim for things, always wants to judge things and react to them. That thing, if you can be mindful of that and just stop it, delete it, turn it off, then you have wonderful meditations. In my meditation, I don't do a thing. I sit here, close my eyes, and totally let go. That's why I'm a good meditator. It can't be easier than that. Sit here and do nothing. But I really know how to do nothing. For some of you, you just can't do nothing. You always have to get involved. So this is actually the trick. This is one trick to learn. It's learning how to let go. And then stillness happens. And it just, you go on this journey, this process, you're just an observer. And all these amazing things which I talked about in my books, which you hear other people talk about, these amazing experiences, they just come to you. And it's just quite humbling and awesome to feel that even you can get these amazing experiences in meditation, just like in the time of the Buddha. So easy to do. And this is actually how we meditate. And I'll be giving some more instructions tomorrow and the day afterwards. There'll be interviews in the afternoon from 4 to 6. But because this is the more serious retreat, can I please ask for no interviews about the problems with your son? No interviews about the problems with your wife? No interviews and questions about the problem with your finances? Now just keep it on meditation, for goodness sake, so that's all you're really focusing on. Because sometimes, look, I'm not a marriage counsellor, I've never been married, I haven't had children, so I just make this up as I go along. The thing which I am an expert on, I do know what I'm talking about, is meditation. So just use this resource. And don't waste this resource on silly questions which I don't really know what I'm talking about. Meditation, Buddhism, Dhamma, yeah, that's my experience, that's my field of expertise. So you make the best use, you exploit the resource of Ajahn Brahm to the max, and you don't just waste it. It's just like going to a Buddha and asking him, who did he think he's going to win the football match? It's crazy, it's a Buddha, there mightn't be him. There's incredible teachings, you ask some stupid questions. So, that's what I ask you to do. So you've only got 3 days. Now the next thing I just wanted to emphasize is that you know you're making progress if you're getting happier. Use happiness as a guide to see whether you're making progress in meditation. Because sometimes people say, how many hours I sit is a level of my progress. How long I could stand or I could be still, that's the level of my progress. And you may all know, those of you who've been to London, who've been to Buckingham Palace, have seen those soldiers stand perfectly still for 2 hours, but take it for granted from me, they are not enlightened, they're not streamlined, they haven't got jhana when they're sitting there, or standing there. They just do that through force. You can sit for many hours through willpower, and have your body perfectly still just through effort. That's not meditation. So if you want to judge how your meditation's going, whether you're making progress, the happiness, the lightness, the peace you feel in the mind, that is a much better indicator that it's working. It's joy coming up. Clarity. The reason is because as the meditation develops, the mindfulness is awareness, being able to see what's going on inside your head. That gets brighter. And always, as it gets brighter, it always comes with more happiness. Literally, you're more bubbly, more joyful. And if you feel like laughing, laughing is not breaking noble silence. And I say that because sometimes you get so inspired, sometimes so much joy bubbles up, you just want to laugh. That is not breaking noble silence. You can laugh as much as you like, but don't speak. I say that because sometimes that's a form of pity or joy that comes up in meditation. This is so funny. You just laugh. For no reason whatsoever. Try that. It's good fun. So, look out for the joy. And please, when it starts to arise, please do not suppress it or be afraid of it. Again, that's one of the other teachings of some monks of a long time. Really, they just don't know what they're talking about. They're just following their teachers. Whenever they get happiness in meditation, that's wrong. Just be mindful, let it go. Don't get attached. That is absolutely wrong teachings on meditation. If anyone wishes to see, I'll show you in the books exactly where that's written. It's actually from the Pasadika Sutta, Ranavibhanga Sutta, Mahamarukya Putta Sutta. There's so many places where the Buddha said, don't be afraid of that happiness. It's supposed to come up. Follow it, develop it, make much of it, the Buddha said. So when the meditation starts to get happy, good, brilliant, you're getting something. Don't be afraid of it. Just be with it and see how that happiness can increase. You always find out is by being more still, letting go more, the happiness gets more and more. That is a wonderful indicator, like the dial, to see how much petrol you've got in the tank of your car. That shows you how your meditation is developing. The happiness indicator. If you're miserable, you're doing something wrong. Which is why basic teaching of meditation, Four Noble Truths, Second Noble Truth, craving leads to suffering. Wanting leads to tension. So if you've got a tight mind, it's because you want. That is not the path of meditation. Third Noble Truth, letting go of craving. Letting go of wanting. Of wanting anything. Wanting deep meditation, wanting jhanas, wanting enlightenment. Letting go of all that wanting is what leads to nirvana. Third Noble Truth. So in meditation, you understand what that Third Noble Truth is. The more you let go, the more you abandon things, the more you free the mind, the closer you get to nirvana. It means the mind starts to meditate, you get peaceful, you get bliss, you feel this incredible sense of freedom. Things disappear, you get more empty. You're on the path. It's blissful. Nirvana paramam sukham. Nirvana is highest, the ultimate happiness. So the closer you get, the happier you are. That's what I know in the process of meditation is going well. By the smile on their face. By the happiness in their heart. And that stays with you for a long time. So when you go back, people are amazed. What's happened? What have you done? Are you taking drugs? What do you want? That's probably what they think, because that's the only time they see such happiness. When people are high on some illegal substance. There's nothing illegal at all, there's no chemical. It's the nature of the mind which experiences deep meditation. You really get happy. You know, if I have any wish, it's that each one of you here just taste some of that happiness. Again, that will blow your mind. You'll understand why Buddhism has lasted so many centuries. And you get a taste of what this path is all about. Deep bliss and peace. Really happy. Oh, it's so nice. You also understand why monks and monks and nuns and nuns want to give up so much. I'm not giving up anything. I'm not giving up anything. I'm just having more fun than you are. That's all. So this is the path of meditation. I'm not going to hold back over the next 3 days. I'm going to teach you as I would teach monks. The whole world. Because I respect you. Most of you won't get anywhere. Some of you will. But eventually you won't get there. Just a matter of time. So anyway, that's what's laying ahead on this retreat point. There are some questions over here, but it has been our custom during the 8 till 10 o'clock session every evening to have a toilet break, because you are human. I was trained by Ajahn Chah to sit there until Ajahn Chah was finished, and then I could go to the toilet 4, 5, 6 hours sometimes. So my bladders are so well trained. I can sit here for hours, but you maybe can't. Even though I'm getting old, I can still sit for hours. So off you go to the toilet, and please come back in 5 or 10 minutes. But this is not a chat break. This is a toilet break. So please go there silently and come back quietly. 10 or 15 minutes.